Good morning, everyone, and welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That is the very dapper Hall of Famer, Chris Carter. I know that because he's wearing a Hall of Fame jacket. Get to that in a second. This right here is Nick Wright.
Looking great, C. I don't think you've ever worn that on the show.
No, I haven't. Christine had an amazing tie with my other jacket, and then I was traveling because I'm traveling today. My Hall of Fame jacket was there, and I saw, man, this is a nice match. Let me wear it, Hall of Fame weekend. So we'll do it, at least for the first segment.
But that's where you're traveling to, the Hall of Fame weekend.
Yes, Hall of NFL season starts tonight. First
that's
NFL
it.
Game.
Yep.
Season number 100. Let's get it.
Atlanta plus it. 2.5.
No, disc.
Well, we've got a big NFL show for you today. Ezekiel Elliott and the Cowboys are reportedly nowhere near a new deal. The L.A. Rams will be the first to tell you they took the Super Bowl loss hard last year. Nick patting himself on the back for mentioning something about soccer. What some would call a putrid performance against New England. Todd Gurley struggled. Jared Goff threw a crucial interception. And Sean McVay has been telling anyone who'll listen that he's to blame for the loss, saying that the reality is, quote, I didn't give us a chance really to have offensive production. Nick, will the Rams bounce back after losing his Super Bowl and losing it the way they did?
Well, if they do, I think Sean McVay's self-awareness here will be a huge part of it. I thought this entire interview was really interesting, where Sean McVay is asked, when did you realize you had not prepared properly? And he said, about halfway through the game, during the game, while I was coaching, while the Patriots were attacking us with things they had not put on film all year long. And the old proverb is, failure is the greatest teacher, but that is not always how it works. For a lot of people, especially young people who've been incredibly successful early, when they fail for the first time, sometimes the reaction is, well, got unlucky, my running back was hurt, ran into an all-time great. If, you know, Goff had, they had the one touchdown that was just missed, and then on the next play, it's intercepted if they make that throw. Instead, he says, no. Even if they had won that game, he would have realized he was out-coached. He was out-prepared, out-maneuvered.
That's the key. He wasn't prepared for what the Patriots had.
And it wasn't for a lack of trying. It wasn't like the Rams were taking the week off. It was because the Patriots, with their 8 Super Bowl trips prior to this one, they had the experience to know what to do, how to prepare, and how to catch the Rams off guard. Now, how can they take those lessons into this year? I think that will be helpful. I don't know how much it will matter if Todd Gurley's knee is not healthy, if Jared Goff is not able to show he can be an elite-level quarterback with or without Cooper Kupp, because once Cooper Kupp went away, Jared Goff's production went in the tank, and then when Todd Gurley stopped being an elite performer, then really their offense as a whole went in the tank. So I have some trepidation about the Rams as a whole. But for Sean McVay, a guy who's 24-8 in his 2 years coaching, 2 years in the playoffs, second year he makes it all the way to the Super Bowl, to have that level of self-awareness, say, man, I just got beat by a better man on the other side of the field, I think is great for the Rams moving forward.
From a strategy standpoint in the Super Bowl, and not just because they're 8 Super Bowl appearances, it's because the wealth of information that Belichick has. Belichick goes through not only his days as a head coach, but he goes back to the 80s when he was defensive coordinator on the Giants. And he'll go through NFL history and pick out a team that was like the Rams and see what has he done against them that's been successful. Sean McVay didn't look at it that way. He didn't look at it in the last 30 years, what kind of team has he faced that was like our team? What did they do to take them away? Like the greatest show on turf, what did they do? And typically what they do is they crowd the line of scrimmage. They're going to play bump and run on the outside because they believe their DBs are better than yours. They're not going to let the quarterback have a clean look. They're going to blitz you off the outsides. So McVay, how they make their living? 3 receivers, 1 tight end. They did not change it up. Kyle Van Noy sat right here and told us after the Super Bowl, we had 3 game plans and we never got to plan B. Why? Because they did not adjust to plan number A. So at least at halftime, with the extended amount of time that you have, you would think he would look at his personnel groupings, look at the defense he was getting, and change those personnel up. See, to me, I don't like the fact that he's only predominantly a 3-receiver team with 1 running back. It becomes easy to book you. In our great days in Minnesota, we were 3 receivers. But I would say 2 of our 3 were better than any of the receivers that they have. So,
of course.
So we didn't stay in that personnel all the time, and we were a lot better than them. Randy Moss and myself being Hall of Famers. So when you face a guy like Belichick, you have to have a changeup. You have to go heavy personnel. I'm not going to go three wide receivers. I'm going to go three tight ends. I'm going to go more with the fullback. I thought the personnel they should have used was two tight ends. Split the formation so you can have a wide receiver and tight end on both sides. They can't blitz you. So you don't have a weak side to your formation. So you can pick up. You can change the protections. And that's not something that Sean McVay did. And he should admit it. Because it was fairly obvious that he did not make the type of adjustments, and he does not know how to coach the Rams with an injured Todd Gurley. Even using Todd Gurley as a decoy at sometimes, motion him out, have a linebacker run outside the box to be able to give you some different looks. And, I mean, I'm not surprised that he admitted to it, because to me, watching the game, it was fairly obvious.
Nick, so last year we spent the whole season talking about Sean McVay as the wunderkind in offensive coaches, this you know, hotshot guru who was going to take this offense out, and wait till you see what it could do. Do you think the Super Bowl loss perhaps translates into a loss of luster a little bit heading into this season? Are we still as high on the Rams as we were last year because of what you saw in the Super Bowl?
Well, I don't think, at least for me, I don't hold against a second-year head coach that all they did was get to the Super Bowl. But what I will tell you is, if luster aside, all of a sudden, the whole league's got a book on them. All of a sudden, the whole league, now maybe they don't have the corners of the Patriots, they don't have the coaches of the Patriots, but they will look at exactly what the Patriots did in that Super Bowl and say, how can we use our personnel to do something similar? How can we force the Rams to adjust to what we are doing? Because Chris's point that the Rams ran the same formation, the same personnel, more than any team in the league, and it was an element of, we're going to do what we do and no one can stop us. And that was correct until they got stopped. And then what we learned was, it wasn't just that they weren't adjusting during the year because they didn't have to. They might have not been adjusting because they couldn't. And so when you mentioned that the Patriots had A, B, and C, according to Kyle Van Noy,
yes,
the Patriots didn't have to go to plan B, but I have a lot of faith they could have. That if the Rams would have been ready, if the Rams would have on the first possession driven down the field and scored a touchdown, the Patriots would have changed it up. The Rams had drive after drive to show them that, okay, we need to change, and they didn't show the ability to do that.
No, that's what Sean McVay, as a second-year coach, getting his team, managing that roster with all the different personalities, tremendous accomplishment in his second year. He's still one of the brightest minds that we have in the NFL. But it's like one of those spelling bees. You see those kids go out there, they're amazing. And then all of a sudden, they have a word come up, and it might look easy to you, and they get embarrassed. And this is what the best that we have in football over the last 100 years is Bill Belichick. And he schooled the kid in Super Bowl 53. That was last year, 53, Super Bowl 53 last year. He schooled him. He took him to school. And with the elongated halftime, I would expect Sean McVay to come up with something. There was 2 weeks to prepare for the game, and then you basically have 30 minutes at halftime to put in another game plan, and they didn't do that.
You know what word gets me? Calendar. I never know if it's C-A-L-A or calendar. That's the word.
C-A-L-E-N.
Well, now
D-A-R.
I know.
There you go, Jenna.
There you go.
That's also why you weren't in a spelling bee.
Coming up. You don't know that. Okay, I wasn't. Will Baker to Odell be the best quarterback wide receiver connection in the NFL? That's next on First Things First. We've got a great heavyweight battle for you coming up on Saturday as Brooklyn's unbeaten Adam Kovnovsky takes on Chris Areola Saturday, 8 Eastern, 5 Pacific, on Fox and the Fox Sports app. It is now time for Say What? Yesterday was the 6th day of training camp for Baker Mayfield and the Browns. Baker looking to build on his impressive rookie season. He's also sporting a new look that he was asked about. Say what?
You seem to be having fun on camera a couple of times with the mustache. Is there a story behind it?
Maybe you'll find out, maybe you won't. I don't know. That's the elegance of having a mustache. You just don't know what's going to happen.
No kind of bed or quarterback bonding or anything like that?
It's like the QB RV. You guys just don't know.
Occurring in any films in the future, right?
You would like that, wouldn't you?
Baker.
The standalone mustache is a bold look in 2019. I mean, maybe like in the Dan Pastorini era, there were a lot of quarterbacks rocking the mustache. But I can't, I mean...
Aaron Rodgers pulled it off. Remember, he spent about a season trying to pull that off?
But that was for him, wasn't it? It started with the no shave November.
And he kept it.
And he kept it going. Yeah. Baker's just...
I think he's just trying to get through training camp.
It's just a little distraction?
Just trying to get through training camp. I got a month. I got to be here. Some of my answers are just so I can make it through.
Is that what inspired your mustache back in the day, C? Dunk contest era Chris Carter, mustachioed Chris Carter?
No, I mean, I think at some point you like to know you can grow a mustache. You know what I'm saying? And then, it was time to get rid of it.
Once you prove it to yourself and to the public, what's
How big of a bet would you have to lose to just go stash only, Nick?
I'll go stash only tomorrow. No problem, Jenna.
For real?
What? We'll see. Tune in then.
Time now for stories to start your morning, Baker.
I don't know what that was.
Football starts tonight. Broncos, Falcons facing off in the Hall of Fame game. Joe Flacco won't play, but we'll get our first look at Denver's second-round quarterback selection, Drew Locke. See, what are you looking for?
Make sure guys don't get hurt. Yeah. Denver, and they got to change this, get this franchise turned around. Got a lot of young players playing. They should build off the rookie running back they had last season, build off of him, try to rebuild that offensive line, play to that defensive front that they have there. Atlanta, man, Atlanta's trying to get back into the playoffs. Matty Ice talks about he's having a good camp. Julio's not going to play throughout the preseason. I'm going to try to get some scoop. So, Julio, where's that number going to land? $22 million? $21 million? What's that extension looking like?
Chris will be out there in Canton tonight. You mentioned for the Broncos, the story for their season is not Joe Flacco, nor is it Drew Locke. It's about those two rookie running backs, Philip Lindsay and Royce Freeman. Can they build on what they did last year? And Von Miller's in his walk year. Von Miller, what can he do for that defense? They're going to have to be a defensive-oriented team. By the way, we're going to find out none of that tonight because it's the first of five preseason games.
NFL.com released its list of the top 100 players in the league, and two-time reigning Defensive Player of the Year Aaron Donald was ranked number one. See, you think the players got this right?
Aaron Donald, he generates the type of respect that only a few players that I've seen in the last 40 years. He's earned it. I mean, he is unbelievable. Against the run, against the pass, great working in the locker room, a great teammate, a workout warrior. Jenna, he's like he never got drafted. He's like my former teammate, Johnny Randall, who wasn't drafted at all. But that intensity that they bring, I'm glad that the NFL are rewarding Aaron Donald because he's a special, special player.
And it should be noted that this is a list voted on by players, so it shows the respect that he's earned. Over the last decade, see, we've had two guys top this list that are non-glamour positions. J.J. Watt, who did it as a 3-4 defensive end, a place that's very hard to get huge sack numbers, and Aaron Donald playing mostly defensive tackle. But those are two, I don't think it's stretch at all to say, all-time great defensive players. Donald, I got no problem with this part of the list.
I can guarantee if the media is doing this list, those guys never are. But good football players know a great football player when they see one.
All right, sticking with the list, Drew Brees was ranked second overall. The next quarterback, Patrick Mahomes, at 4. Mahomes beat out Brees for the MVP last season, keep in mind. Nick, you want to weigh in on this?
Yeah, I mean, they just got this flatly wrong. There's another wrong. Nothing against Drew Brees, but if it's based on last season, obviously Mahomes was better last season. You can't even add, well, Brees was better in the playoffs. He wasn't. They went to the same round of the playoffs. Mahomes was better. I love Drew Brees. He was excellent last year. Obviously, Patrick Mahomes should have been the first offensive player ranked in this list.
It's not obvious.
Well, I mean, it was. We talked about it.
The segment before, we're like, oh, Aaron Donald, the players know what they're talking about. Yeah. Now, all of a sudden, the rest of the list, the players don't know what they're talking about.
I thought they did a pretty good list. They just got this one wrong.
If you look at week number 1-13, Drew Brees, you can make a case, and the players did, that he was the better quarterback. And also, if the players looked at the personnel, who's got better personnel? Man, Mahomes has way better personnel than Drew Brees. Well, then Drew Brees did more with less. That's why they have him ahead of Patty Mahomes. But what do I know?
Yesterday, you and I both said we thought Mahomes would be the top quarterback.
But he wasn't. I'm justifying their answer, Nick.
Yeah, they got the wrong answer. They got the wrong answer.
Yeah, okay. I'm the guy that played. The guys who are playing don't know what they're talking about.
But they got the wrong answer. That's okay. Hey, this is Nick Wright from First Things First. And you have to check out this website, pristine.com. Pristine Auction has daily auctions with $1 starting bids. Authenticity is important to Pristine Auction. Pristine Auction guarantees authenticity, and it comes with authentication from the most trusted sources. Pristine Auctions are affordable. Most people don't think they can afford this stuff, but it's much more affordable than you think. A Dick Butkus signed Bears jersey sold for just $56, and a Mike Tyson autographed boxing glove sold for under $100. It's quick and free to register. Bidding is free, and you only pay if you win. Use registration code FTF when joining PRISTINE.com, and new users will receive a $5 auction credit. Again, you'll get a $5 auction credit when using registration code FTF to sign up for pristine.com. That's PRISTINE.com.
They're allowed to get it. Well, including Breeze.
What kind
and
of jacket
Mahomes.
You got on today?
A plaid. Pretty nice one. It's not a Hall of Fame jacket. What? It's a Hall of Fame ranking jacket, though, by the way. Okay. I'm an expert ranker.
Made by
of
Buster Brown.
Okay. All right, including Breeze and Mahomes, there are 15 total quarterbacks in the top 100, none of whom are Dak Prescott.
That Did they get this right?
That is a huge fall from just 2 years ago when he was ranked the 14th best player in the entire NFL. In the same players poll. We're still waiting to see what the Cowboys decide to do with Dak's contract. But, Nick, what does this tell you about Dak?
That the players voting on this think what I believe the general public mostly thinks about Dak, which is he is a league average NFL starter. That he is, his best traits are the intangible leadership and the availability, and that as a passer, he's limited. And that, I mean, if Carson Wentz is the 15th on this list. It's very hard to find a quarterback that was on this top 100 of those 15 quarterbacks that you can make a compelling case Dak should be ahead of, that Dak should replace. I know some people are down on Kirk Cousins, so some people would say Kirk because he's not great in big games, but Kirk's overall numbers are so far and away greater than Dak Prescott's, and his body of work
is far greater,
even if Kirk hasn't done in the playoffs the way Dak has. Maybe you can wiggle yourself into an argument. He shouldn't be out of the top 15. He should be 15th. But that's as high as it gets. There's no one else on this list, and it speaks to the depth of talent at the position. As we've been talking about all offseason, the old guys aren't retiring. The young guys are really good quick, and the veterans like Rodgers and Wilson and Luck are right in the apex prime of their career. So you all of a sudden have a glut of really good quarterbacks. It's great for the fans. It's not great for Dak's where he falls in the ranking. I don't think we're that far removed from an era of football where Dak would have been in the argument to be a top 10 quarterback. But that's not the era we're in right now. So in this regard, I think it's pretty obvious that these 15 guys, player for player, are better than Dak, and you'd feel more comfortable with them being your quarterback going into this season.
So why is it then the Cowboys are going to pay Dak Prescott as if he's one of the top four quarterbacks, three quarterbacks, whoever it is in the league? I mean, what do they see that we're not seeing or that the NFL players who voted on this aren't seeing?
Yeah, I remember late in my career, Jerry Rice, at that time, he was the highest paid, and he got a new deal that broke the record for wide receivers. And Michael Irvin got a deal right after that. And then I went to my general manager and was like, I got that same kind of deal. And he's like, you're not Jerry Rice. You know, we consider Jerry Rice to be the premier, not only wide receiver, but one of the premier football players. Well, what about Mike Irvin? Well, yeah, we look at you and Mike, man, you guys are about the same. I said, well, we'll call up Mike. I had Mike's number. He called him on the phone. Went, hey, it's the playmaker. I'm not available right now. I said, what did it say? He said, he's not available right now. I said, okay. I'm your answer, bro. All right, he's not available. I'm all you have. And the Cowboys, this is their answer. And he's as good as what we see on tape. It's not like, oh, you know, they're holding him back. No. In his first year, he had a phenomenal year. And the players gave him credit for that. But in the 2 years after that, he has not been in the top 100. We are in a unique situation in pro football where we have four guys in their late 30s to 40s that are playing phenomenal football, still at a high level. So the first 4 to 10 spots, they're gone. So now we got these young players that are coming in, and they're playing great football immediately. In their first 4 years, they're playing MVP-caliber football. So now a guy like Dak, where we're throwing the ball league-wide 65% of the time, he's on a grind-it-out, three all-pro offensive linemen, a great running back, a good defense. The players see that. So Dak He's going to have a hard time moving up. He has a hard time throwing the ball. If they take away the running game, he has a hard time throwing. The players realize that. There are too many guys in 2019 that throw the ball down the field with precision that I could say, if they were on the Dallas Cowboys, are the Dallas Cowboys better? And you'd be like, yes. To me, what Dak Prescott needs to do is go back, get this contract, and go back to being a true dual threat quarterback, where I will run the ball and I will throw it. Because I don't think he's going to be an elite thrower, ever. But his athleticism, the combination, that's how Dallas can win. And that's how they can up the red number, red zone percentage in scoring, because they're awful. But that would make him different. That'd make him better than Lamar. It'd make him better than the other athletic quarterbacks. And it would put – there's no one that's a dual threat right now with balance. So that could be that.
Well, and you mentioned the red zone, because that is what to me really, really damaged their offense last year, being 26th in the NFL in red zone percentage, scoring touchdowns on just 51% of their trips there. Warren Sharp pointed this out yesterday. I thought it was a really good point. Dak's success rate when running in the red zone was one of the very best in football. He just didn't do it very often. The Cowboys didn't utilize that element of his game as often as they should have. Zeke, as great as he is, his success rate was below average running in the red zone, not because Zeke's not great, but because everyone knew that's what they were going to do. They were loading up. They had those heavy fronts to where he had no holes to run through. So that is a way to get the most out of Dak Prescott. But the last point, the Cowboys have a tendency to wait on these deals, meaning into the offseason. And if they are going to re-sign Dak, I think they're going to regret letting Carson Wentz re-sign first, just like they might regret with Amari Cooper letting Michael Thomas re-sign first, because all of a sudden the new standard is set in a different way, which ups the price just a few million here and a few million there, and that adds up.
All right, let's move on and talk about some Cleveland Brown action, where the hype and the expectations are sky high after Baker Mayfield's terrific rookie year, even higher after Odell Beckham Jr. was added to the mix this offseason. But hype will only take you so far. Now they've got to actually go play a few games to see how it all comes together off paper. So how's that chemistry working between Baker and Odell? We'll let the quarterback tell you.
It's coming along great, you know, as expected. Once you verbalize what we need to accomplish, then you get out there and you're I'm able to kind of put it anywhere with him. So it's coming along great. And I think there's an appreciation from my end that, you know, he's able to come communicate and talk through things. And it's just having that open relationship. Obviously, there's a chain of command. What Freddie says goes. But just being able to talk through things and see it from their perspective or mine is really good.
So, you see, for the most part, these two just started working together. Odell wasn't there. I don't think Jarvis was there either. But Odell wasn't there during OTAs and minicamp. So what is that learning curve like? What is the timing when you talk about chemistry with a wide receiver?
All right. And just like you and I talked this morning, because he wasn't there, people didn't make a big deal about it. But it slows down the communication. I mean, because Odell's getting a new playbook, even though he's familiar with the wide receiver coach, familiar with Jarvis. They're doing different things in Cleveland. Baker, his ball you have to adjust to. I worked out with Eli Manning. I worked out with Eli Manning and Peyton Manning down at their passing camp. My son was in the passing camp. I had just retired. I was still in great shape, and they were going through an NFL workout. They had a bunch of quarterbacks down there throwing. They needed some wide receivers. So I know Eli. I know the kind of ball he throws. And Eli, surprisingly, has a stronger arm than people give him credit for. He has a stronger arm than Peyton. But he does not have the arm that Baker Mayfield. Baker Mayfield is an exceptional thrower of the football. Long, short. Before the game I did last year with him, I went on the field, caught passes with him because I wanted to see, I wanted to feel it. He throws a tight spiral. That's why I thought he could be successful, even though he's not the pro type height in Cleveland with that bad weather. He has a big enough hand. He's got a great grip on the ball. But, man, he can flat out just throw it. And when you're not there for the mini camps, now all the practices become really important. Some of those things we could have worked out in April and May, we have to force to work them out now in July because we weren't there. And this will build. They will get to the game and get some game experience, and the relationship will build. Once they get to the playoffs and the intensity, primetime games, then it will build. This is not a finished product. This is going to take years and years and years to be able to get the type of chemistry that we've seen with some of the people like A.B., Ben Roethlisberger, Julio and Matty Ice. It takes time. Michael Thomas and Drew Brees. It takes time, but they're off to a great start. When you have talent, which they do, throwing talent and wide receiver talent, one thing that Baker said that I thought was phenomenal, and they have unbelievable talent at Oklahoma when he was there. Offensive line ranked the best offensive line, and he's got a bunch of skilled guys that would be sprinkled around the NFL. OBJ does things I'd never seen before. And when you have that in a wide receiver, as a quarterback, you start making compromises. Like, oh, okay, I don't have to be perfect. So your confidence goes up because you see the talent. Not only his catching ability, his route running, and his ability to escape from the top of the route and expand and get away from people, that's one of the things that makes OBJ special.
Well, that also should definitely not shortcut, but ease this transition, because Baker is the most talented at the moment thrower of the football Odell's ever played with, high school, college, pro. And Odell is obviously the most talented receiver Baker's ever played with, high school, college, pro. And so in that regard, there is an element of, okay, we're not, our communication's not flawless. Right. And our timing and our chemistry is not yet where we want it to be. But we are both all having the luxury of playing with the best guy we've ever played with. But there is an element when you talked about Eli's got a stronger arm than people give him credit for, but not the arm Baker has. I remember last year when they were switching from Tyrod, who, whatever you think of Tyrod, he obviously doesn't have the strongest arm in the league, to Baker, and what Jarvis said. And Jarvis talked about in practice, the ball catching up to him, getting up on him quicker than he thought, having to adjust it. For Odell, what are the things he can do to adjust to the velocity of the ball, the way the ball looks, reading the football coming out of Baker's hands?
All you can do is just get the reps. Until you see it, until you see the ball traveling, until you actually live it out, you're not going to appreciate the type of speed. But it's a matter of getting the reps and after practice, getting on the same page. It's having a handful of routes after practice, we're going to throw those. One thing, too, that neither one of them has dealt with, OBJ has never had a quarterback as outspoken as Baker. So when he decides to go on and have one of his, Baker's going to say something to him. How they react to that becomes very important. And Baker has never had a wide receiver who acts the way that Odell acts. So there's going to be some learning there, because there's a difference of when we have a meeting and I say, oh, that route sucked, compared to we get in the game, you're in Pittsburgh and you run a bad route. And he's like, that route sucks. Because the intensity to it, we have to allow this to play out. Game experience is the only thing that will get them ready. You can only do so much in practice, but the time that they missed, it slows down their learning curve.
I think it's so important. We always talk chemistry. We talk on-the-field chemistry and timing and routes and all of it. But I think getting to know each other's personality is also a big part of making things work.
Yeah, like you realize Nick's a jerk now, so it doesn't get you up.
So I'm like one step ahead of other people who don't realize
it. It's like another day.
Yeah, I'm a bad guy.
Love you,
Nick. That's the story on me.
Coming up, is it starting to look like Ezekiel Elliott won't play a game for the Cowboys this season? Talking about that on First Things First. Here, First Things First, we're now joined by that guy, Super Bowl champ Chris Canty.
Flex the gold jacket,
slim around the waist, smooth around the face.
Hey, I'm trying, man.
See that, Jenna? Don't try that.
I was just like,
what up, Chris?
Face,
slim around the waist, smooth around the face.
That's how I'm introducing you from now on.
Please don't.
As the face waist is a waste of face.
It can't get any more awkward, so.
No, trust me, it can. Canty, the most talked about holdout in the NFL right now is happening with the Dallas Cowboys, and the Cowboys' best player, Ezekiel Elliott. Cowboys seem to be taking a hard stance with Zeke. According to Jane Slater of NFL Network, who was on Undisputed and The Herd yesterday, the two sides are not close. When she asked her source if it was the guarantee or the length of the deal, her source said, quote, it's everything. All right, Chris Canty, are you surprised? What's your reaction to how far apart the two sides are right now?
I'm a little bit surprised, because I feel like there's more urgency within that Cowboys organization to try to win a championship. And you're not going to win a championship without Ezekiel Elliott. Now, I heard Stephen Jones' comments yesterday. He said, we're damn sure not going to set the market for every player at their position. You're not going to pay Dak Prescott as the highest paid quarterback in the NFL. You're not going to do that with Amari Cooper, especially after that Michael Thomas deal. And you're not trying to do that with Ezekiel Elliott. But the reality is the Cowboys are on the verge of being penny wise and dollar foolish. Because if you can't win without Ezekiel Elliott, then you need to try to mend fences and work that out. You've got to try to arrange something where you can negotiate a contract that you can live with over the course of the next three or four seasons, because that's what your window is to compete for a championship. Like, I know that they've got a lot of mouths to feed. You got to pay Dak. You got to pay Amari. The bill on Byron Jones is going to come due, Jalen Smith as well. So you've got to take care of all of those guys. And the reality is you might not be able to spread the wealth in terms of taking care of all of them. But right now, you have to get the best player on the team in the training camp.
And what they don't want to do with Dak and Amari, I would imagine, is something very similar to what they did with DeMarcus Lawrence, which is pay a really good player as if he is the best player at his spot in the league. But with Zeke, it's a different story here. Chris, what's those two lists you said Denny Green and the Vikings had? One was 1 through 53.
Oh, top to bottom, who's the best?
And then the next lined up to it was you guys would make a list of top to bottom. Does it line up with how they're getting paid, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, on that first list, who's the best, 1 through 53? Who's at the top of that list for the Dallas Cowboys?
Zeke.
And if we were to do, not the Cowboys list, but 1 through 32, starting running backs in the NFL, with Todd Gurley having that knee issue, Zeke's 1 or 2 to me with Saquon. Like, he is...
Ezekiel Elliott is the best running back. When you talk about running the football, he's the best running back in the
NFL. The best pure runner, but yes. When you're paying a guy, you're paying for all the performance catching as well. But regardless, he's without question top three, and you can say he's the best. So paying him as the best makes sense. Like, setting the market with Dak would be totally irrational. As good as Amari is, setting the market with Amari, I think, would be at least slightly irrational. Setting the market with Zeke would not be irrational. Their problem is they think the market got set too high by Todd Gurley's deal, and they doubled down on that problem by saying back in May, his deal starts at Todd Gurley's deal. So the Cowboys are, they've backed themselves into this corner, and then Zeke has kept them there by not showing up. I truly believe the Cowboys plan to make Ezekiel Elliott the highest paid running back in NFL history a year from now. Not right now. They knew they needed to pay right now. They knew about Byron Jones, even though he doesn't seem to be a priority. Dak has clearly been a priority, and Amari has to be because of what you traded to get him and because what he did for Dak Prescott. But Zeke's the one who's forcing their hand, and the fact that they're really far away, according to Jane Slater, that's bad news for all parties, because it's not good for Zeke for this holdout, $40,000 a day, to continue to toll for him to potentially have to make the decision of missing games. And it's obviously not good for the Cowboys. They're out here signing Alfred Morris because they have no other legitimate alternative on the roster.
To Zeke's defense, since he came into the league 2016, no one's touched the ball more.
Yep.
No one's had more yards from scrimmage. So he's taking a pounding, and they're not going to change that offense. He getting ready to touch the ball 450 times this year. Season after that, another four. He got 1,000 touches in him before he even gets any new money. Now, I grew up in a single-parent home. My mom raised 7 kids. Now, my mom was amazing. And when she would cook dinner, my mom would always not eat. All the other kids would be able to eat and everything, and a lot of times my mom wouldn't have anything. Zeke said, listen, I ain't like Chris's mama. I need to eat. The reason why I'm eating all the time, I'm going to eat first, all right? I ain't concerned about Dak. I know we came into the league together. I know we traded for Amari. That ain't my problem. I know you signed this great offensive lineman. That ain't my problem. Zeke is making sure, because of the wear and tear and what's happening in Los Angeles with Todd Gurley, if Todd Gurley was healthy, had played in the playoffs and the Super Bowl, and the narrative was a little bit different, I think Zeke's camp would be a little bit different. But when you see him nicked, and he's a shell of his player, and come a year and a half, when the Rams come to cut him or ask him for a pay reduction, that's what Zeke is not trying to be in that same category. So I believe this is going to be ugly, man. They got to make Zeke the highest paid, and they've made Dak a priority. Let's see who's going to win. And I believe Jerry Jones is going to give the quarterback the extension first.
But if you make Dak the priority, does that mean that you have to make him the highest paid quarterback in the league or pay him $25, $30 million? Can't you say the best player on this team is Zeke, pay him the highest? Maybe Dak's the one that takes a bit of a pay cut?
No, Dak's not going to take a pay cut. I mean, Jerry Jones has got Dak on the cheap for the first 3 years of his deal. He was a fourth round draft pick. He was a thousandaire, not a millionaire. So, I mean, this is Dak's first bite at the apple. With Ezekiel Elliott, though, I look at this situation and say that that's the insurance policy for the investment that you're about to make with your quarterback. If you're going to pay Dak Prescott $30 million a year plus, I want the very best version of Dak Prescott, and you're not going to see that without Ezekiel Elliott. Yes, that's not going to happen. So, I mean, you look at the situation and you prioritize it. The quarterback, obviously, by nature of the position, he's got to be first in line. But to me, the next one up has got to be Ezekiel Elliott. I know I traded a first-round draft pick for Amari Cooper.
Yeah.
But it's not like I can't franchise Amari Cooper after his
Amari already option. Let him off the hook.
Yeah, that's
what Amari already told him, I'm not worried about it.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, that's the perfect scenario for Jerry Jones. All you have to do is take care of your running back, and then you'll have the opportunity to address Amari after this season. But you got to get Zeke in. Everybody recognizes between the three triplets on that team, the position that has the shortest shelf life is the running back spot. That's why Zeke has more urgency to get his money now. And if Jerry wants a title, he's got to make sure he takes care of that guy.
And, Jenna, to your question, they are not going to make Dak the highest-paid quarterback in the league, but they also have no shot at getting him at $25 million per. Like, they're right now the highest-paid quarterback in the league is at $35 million per. Dak's camp is looking at Carson Wentz's deal and saying that plus X, because they same draft class, same division, Dak's played every game, he's been to the playoffs twice, he's won a playoff game, and they don't care that Carson Wentz his second season played better. Well, they would argue he's not. They would argue that you can't be better if you're not playing.
It's your agent, so he's representing.
Yeah, you. I mean, yeah. When you see that Carson Wentz got 4 for $128, that's $32 million a year. I think right now the Cowboys would be thrilled if Dak said, I'll take the same contract. And that's where you start getting very expensive. 4 for $100 for Dak does not exist. Maybe a year ago we thought that would be a great contract for him. The market has moved. So they don't have to reset the market with Dak to still make him, you know, give him near record-setting money.
A lot of contracts. All right, Chris, stick around. Coming up, Sean McVay singles out who's to blame for the Rams Super Bowl loss last year. That's next on First Things First.
Okay, quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. Obvious. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. So, to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. And you're improving efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/FTF. netsuite.com/FTF. netsuite.com/FTF.
Back here, First Things First with Chris Canty. Canty, the Rams will be the first to tell you they took the Super Bowl loss hard last year. Todd Gurley struggled. Jared Goff threw a crucial interception. And Sean McVay has been telling anyone who listened that he's the one to blame for the loss, saying that the reality is, quote, I didn't give us a chance really to have offensive production. Chris, you think the Rams bounce back after losing the Super Bowl to the Patriots?
Well, it's hard for me to answer that question because I don't know the health of Todd Gurley. I can't ignore what we saw the last month of the season and on into the postseason. He was a shell of himself. He didn't look like the guy that went from 2,000 yards from scrimmage and 21 touchdowns. So, to me, the biggest issue is whether or not he's going to be healthy, because so much of their offense is predicated on play action. That's why Jared Goff is under center more than any other quarterback in the National Football League. They rely on the threat of Todd Gurley in the backfield to be able to set up concepts in their passing game.
And once he's not a threat.
So we'll have to see what happens early on in the regular season, whether Todd Gurley has returned to form. But in listening to Sean McVay talk about what he learned from the Super Bowl, I think the biggest takeaway was that he recognizes that he does need to learn things, he does need to adapt, and the things that he struggled with throughout the course of the season, he's going to see again. That's exactly what Bill Belichick did. He threw some of the concepts that he struggled with offensively during the season on them in the Super Bowl. That's why he was able to hold that group to 3 points. One of the things that they did, the pre-snap operation. They like to get to the line of scrimmage where there's time on the headset communications so Sean McVay can talk to Jared Goff and tell him what he sees. But Bill Belichick, he had something to counter that. They came out, disguised their looks defensively, and Sean McVay and Jared Goff had no answers. So I think that they've got to learn from that experience, try to take the lessons that they can from it, and they've got to adjust their approach coming into this year.
Well, they have to adjust the 31 personnel. We're the three receiver, one running back. When Cooper Kupp got hurt, they had no plan B, plan C. They kept playing the same formations. Jared Goff suffered as a quarterback. The offense suffered. His quarterback rating went down 20 points with Cooper Kupp. You say, well, what kind of player is Cooper Kupp that he would make that type of difference? You need a very versatile. If you're going to play three receivers, you believe that your three receivers are better than their nickel. Now, New England, they played a regular lineup, and they played some nickel. But when they went to three receivers, New England crowded the line of scrimmage and dared them to pass the football, and they couldn't generate momentum because they couldn't get enough first downs to get that defense booked. When you're in 31 personnel, you're believing. Brian Billick used to tell me, Chris, are you better than their nickelback and the linebacker that they're going to bring out on you in the passing game and in the running game? If you're not, we will take you off the field. We'll put a fullback in the game, or we'll put another tight end in the game. And that's not something that Sean McVay has even looked at doing. 31 might be your best personnel, but what if someone gets hurt? You can't put that formation and think the backups can do what Cooper Kupp and the other people were doing. No, and that was an adjustment that he never made.
Well, and they weren't forced to make it throughout most of the season, because even after Cooper Kupp got hurt, even though Jared Goff's numbers went down, the Rams kept winning. They were alive for the one seed until the final 2 weeks of the regular season. So they still finished 13-3. They felt like we're going to be okay. And I respect Sean McVay immensely for putting it all on himself, for saying what we all saw, which is Belichick had multiple changeups ready, didn't even have to go to him. Sean McVay was pretty clear.
This is the thing about it. It's a team sport. He just told you that BS.
Well, that's what
there's no way it's his whole responsibility.
Well, that's what
he just and players don't like that because they know he's lying. Be genuine in it. It's not all his fault. There were players who could have made plays to make a difference in that game.
Well, that's what I was about to get to, is that while Sean McVay could have put them in a better position from the sideline, the other element here is Jared Goff didn't adjust. Jared Goff all of a sudden looked awful young, let's put it like that, when he didn't have all three of his receivers, when he didn't have Todd Gurley playing like league MVP caliber running back Todd Gurley. And I believe part of what we saw from Jared Goff in the second half of the season and in the Super Bowl is one of the reasons the Rams are saying for Jared Goff, no, we're going to wait on his contract extension. We want to see another year from him, because is Jared Goff a great quarterback, or is he a quarterback who can be great in the perfect system with the perfect pieces around him, with McVay talking him through things as long as you can, with McVay kind of being a second set of eyes once he gets the line of scrimmage, with the opposing defense worrying much more about the running game than the passing game?
I don't agree with you on that. I believe that Sean McVay, just like Kyle Shanahan, is going to utilize the play clock and the mic in the helmet, no matter who their quarterback is. Mm-hmm. Even in Atlanta, when he had a veteran, that's what Kyle Shanahan. And when they teach that, that's what the coaches are teaching. That's one of the advantages to playing offensive football. So for me, I would say it's not Jared Goff. That's the way Sean McVay is going to utilize the play clock, because that is a huge advantage that the offensive players have when the quarterback is mic'd up, the ability to be able to continue to give him information until that cuts off. So for me, I like Jared Goff as a passer. He has shown me that he is definitely a high-level NFL quarterback. Their problem as far as a contract is, they've already gave out two jumbo deals. Mm-hmm. They gave Todd Gurley his deal. So they can't be in a rush. They're not like the Cowboys. They've already given out a huge portion of their salary cap. They have to be very strategic in who they're going to sign next.
No, you're absolutely right. And I think Jared Goff is going to be in line for a contract extension. I mean, you're talking about a quarterback that's under 26 that's gotten his team to a Super Bowl. So Jared Goff is going to get paid by the Rams. We just don't know when that's going to take place. As far as his performance on the field, I agree with you, CC, that Sean McVay is going to continue to take advantage of the coach-to-quarterback communication system in their approach and how they do their pre-snap operation. But what happens when the defense adjusts like New England in the Super Bowl
right.
when they jump into a different look after that communication cuts off. See, that's the part of it that I think Sean McVay needs to do a better job with training Jared Goff throughout the course of the preseason and the regular season so he has answers when, in fact, he gets that look from a defense if that situation were to take place again. I think a lot of the onus has to be on the coaching staff to make sure that they help him evolve in terms of the cerebral aspect of the game. That's something that Sean McVay has to continue to work with Jared Goff on because, after all, the reason that he got the job was because they wanted to get the most out of their number one overall draft.
Well, let's get back to the first thing you said. How much of this offense is handcuffed if Todd Gurley is not Todd Gurley? If who we see as Todd Gurley is the same guy that ended the season last year, how good could Jared Goff be? How good could this offense be?
Their ceiling drops three floors. I mean, this is a guy who's offensive player of the year, who leads the NFL in touchdowns, who can do it catching the ball, running the ball, and make a huge impact on plays when he never touches the ball because of the threat of play action, because of having those linebackers sync up because they're worried about him. He was the guy that when he got that contract with 2 years left, nobody questioned it. Everyone knew how good he was. So he's the best player on their offense. Aaron Donald might be the best player on their team. He's the best player on their offense.
I have higher expectations. I don't believe they dropped that far. If you saw last year when C.J. Anderson ran the ball, the offense was better. It was not the Todd Gurley, but they didn't have another receiver. They didn't have another formation to go to. So you guys are blaming it all on the quarterback and everything. They ran the ball with C.J. Anderson in there. I believe they'll run the ball with Malcolm Brown being in there as the backup because they have a top 10 offensive line. So, yes, they can move the ball without Todd Gurley, but you have to be creative. Sean McVay's got to earn his money. He's got to be able to put him in some good looks, and the look that he threw the interception in the Super Bowl was not a good look. They fooled him in coverage. Stephon Gilmore faked like he was going to be in bump and run, bailed out, and ended up intercepting that ball inside the 5-yard line, which basically ended the game. So it is a continuing build, not only with the quarterback, but with the coach and the rest of this offense.
Yeah, the offense has to have more variety in terms of schemes and personnel groupings. I mean, if you have a couple of seasons where you're lining up in 11 personnel, 3 wide receivers, 1 running back, 1 tight end,
sure.
I mean, teams are going to put that under a microscope. They're going to find a way to neutralize that. It's up to Sean McVay to put more in it. They need to have more versatility in their approach and their overall attack.
All right, we got to take a break. Kenny, we'll see you in a little bit coming up. Is Kyler Murray about to set the league on fire? That is next on First Things First. On Saturday, we got a star-studded MLB doubleheader for you. First, Aaron Judge leads the Yankees against Mookie Betts and the Red Sox. Then Mike Trout and the Angels take on Francisco Lindor and the Indians. It all gets started 12:30 p.m. Eastern, 9:30 a.m. Pacific on FS1 and the Fox Sports app.
Sox and Yanks stood pat at the trade deadline. A little surprising yesterday from them.
All right, we'll get to Kyler Murray in just a second, but first, Pirates and Reds and shortstop Jose Iglesias with a nice spin throw for the out first.
That would have turned two if there was a man
on
first.
There was someone on, yep.
He didn't even need to touch the bag, did it anyway. It's a hell of a play by Iglesias.
Come on, I was laying out, man. You did so well the first time we did this. You were bragging. You were doing cheers.
Oh, I was waiting on the soccer.
This is where he was bragging.
Yeah, I was waiting on the soccer.
Chelsea's Christian Pulisic pulling it through the defender's legs for the score. His first goal with his new club.
Man. He's the U.S. men's best hope for the next World Cup. If he can continue to improve playing on a club the caliber of Chelsea, not only should the men's team make the damn tournament,
I mean, honestly,
but have some success in said tournament. He's just laying out entirely.
All right, a little bit more from this
you
game
like
here.
I was giving you a
Chelsea's
chance.
Chelsea's Pedro scoring a goal. How? The volley off the back heel.
Good
like
crawl.
It's nothing.
Come on, stop. This is unbelievable. Come on, Pedro. Left foot, heel, back of the net. He could play soccer 20 more years and not be able to do something better than that.
All right, let's talk about the number one overall pick in Kyler Murray. With plenty of questions facing the Heisman winner's ability to have success in the league, future Hall of Famer Larry Fitzgerald says we shouldn't worry, stating that he's never seen a rookie quarterback come in like Kyler. So, see, after hearing that from your guy Larry, what are your expectations for Murray as a rookie?
Well, I'm still going to be careful on what the expectations are. What Larry is talking about is that something that younger players struggle with in the NFL more than anything. In the NBA, Major League Baseball, when you go from the minors to the majors, there's a jump in the intensity and the athleticism, all those things, the competition, there is a jump. But the thing that throws people off more so than anything else happens to be just a simple thing called communication. And typically, when you come from college, and there's a reason why Alabama players in the NFL, even though they're playing an NFL defense at Alabama, when they get to the NFL, they struggle. Why? Because the language, not they're doing something different, but the language changes. And Kyler Murray, I believe, unless someone's going to correct me, is the only guy to ever inherit the same offense in the pros as he had in college. So typically, when I'm a wide receiver coming from Ohio State, I got drafted by Philadelphia. First time we went into the meeting room, it was like I was beginning stages of speaking Mandarin, and I had never left Ohio. All right? So that's typical, the change that you have to make, because you might be doing some of the same things you did in college, but they're called something else. And the speed for which the game is coming at you, and the intensity, and coaches are yelling at you, and the players are competitive, and you're trying to make a mark, and you're trying to, that anxiety right there gets most young players. It takes them a long time to be able to learn and to be able to slow the game down. But if you tell me I can run the same system I ran in college, of course I'm gonna get off to a good start. But you have to realize, though, that college system does not work in the pros. And when they start, are able to tackle the quarterback, because in practice right now, everything's looking great. You can't tackle the quarterback. Kyler's starting to realize, wow, almost every time the ball's in the middle of the field. There is no short corner. All these throws are longer. So, yes, he's ahead. I'll listen to Larry, but only so far, Larry, because he did not have to learn a new language. So that helped him out from the beginning. He understood everything that was being presented to him because he's seen it for the last couple years in college
football. And that's why he should be ahead. That's why if he weren't ahead of where the typical rookie is who's learning a new language, learning a new system, you'd be really concerned. But when what you're talking about, you know what it reminded me of was when we had Isaiah Thomas out here talking about what made him special or what makes guys special is their ability to think and process and do things late in games when they're fatigued, when they're exhausted, after they've been doing it for 40-some minutes throughout the first three quarters of the game. And that is the element of where you have the intellectual familiarity with what you're doing that will put Kyler in the beginning at such an advantage, is that after he takes a big sack or after they're in no huddle, where your mind is racing, where you are trying to catch your breath, you are not also, while trying to do all that, as I'm sure you were your first year in Philly, being like, wait, what does that mean? Here's what you're doing it. Whenever you do learn an actual new language, they say you'll know you've actually mastered it when you stop translating in your head, when you start actually just understanding it without saying, wait, in English it means this. For a lot of young guys, they are translating. Okay, at Ohio State X, it meant this, and so here it means that. Kyler has an edge there. We talked with Coach Mangini yesterday that Josh Rosen, the quarterback who was there last year, he's for the first time in his life having to point out the mic. Now, that's not a language issue, but that's an added responsibility issue mm-hmm. that these young players have to deal with. What I'm curious from you, C, is what do you think Kyler will excel at the most immediately, while even despite the possible pitfalls of a college offense translating to the NFL and the NFL teams having a book on it from what they did in college, what Kingsbury's system was, what are the things immediately he'll do the best?
Well, Kyler's an excellent thrower of the football. Even though he's undersized, he's got a big-time arm. He's made a lot of different throws, throwing to the outside, throwing to the middle, throwing deep, throwing short, throwing bubble screen, so he can do those things. What I don't know is this college offense that's in pro football, there's a reason why Chip Kelly is coaching in college again. There's a reason why Steve Spurrier came to Washington Redskins, got his nose bashed in, and then went back to college. Those systems don't work here. So to me, it's not a matter of what is Kyler going to do well at? The college systems haven't worked in the pros because they can't protect the quarterback. The ball's in the middle of the field. The college quarterbacks can't adjust to the long throws, the hot reads and everything. So I know he can throw the ball. I'm not worried about that. I'm worried about how they're going to protect him. And the wild card to me is how much are they going to use David Johnson? All right, if they use him an awful lot, it's going to help Kyler out an awful lot. But until I find that out, is he going to get 25, 20 carries a game to be able to lighten the burden on that rookie quarterback? We'll find that out early in the season.
I didn't watch a ton of Cardinals games last year. The games I did watch is because in large part I wanted to see Josh Rosen play. As you watched him, he just got sacked and sacked and sacked. They had the worst offensive line last year. This year, this O-line comes in ranked 30th in the league. Is that a concern for you with Kyler Murray? Yes, he can escape the pocket more than Josh Rosen can, but isn't that also a bit of a red flag right now?
Oh, it's an enormous concern. concern, and in comparison to his competition, it'll be the worst offensive line he's ever played behind. Oklahoma won the award for best offensive line in college football last season.
Last two seasons
in a row. And so he, for the first time in his football playing life, will be playing behind an offensive line where you are constantly at a disadvantage. That would be tough if he were a seven-year vet. Like, that would be tough. If anyone would have issues playing behind the offensive line Rosen played behind last year. They didn't put a huge priority on offensive line in this year's draft. They went out and got, again, more skill players. They drafted him number one. They took the Andy Isabella in the second round. They took another wide receiver in the fourth round. They got him a bunch of weapons, but that doesn't necessarily help him in the pocket, help him his ability to stay upright. And see, even with good personnel, your concern is this system's ability, even with good offensive linemen, to keep the quarterback upright.
This is a flawed system. I don't believe this system will be successful. I believe that Cliff Kingsbury will be coaching back in college. They don't protect the quarterback enough. They don't have enough variations on, if my number one wide receiver is taken away, how do I get to 2, 3, and 4? The checkdowns and what I've seen, young quarterbacks, I tell Nick this all the time, what's going to happen when he gets hit right here? Because you question yourself as a young player. Because I wish I was back at Ohio State. I said, man, I shouldn't have came out of school. I should have got that extra year. Maybe I should be playing baseball. They better protect him. They better do that from the beginning, because these last two systems that we've seen come from college, Kelly and Spurrier, did not work, regardless of what talent that they had at quarterback.
All right, let's take a break there. Coming up, is it starting to look like Ezekiel Elliott's holdout might drag into the regular season? Next on First Things First. Welcome back. Time now for us to go viral, sponsored by S Western Hotels and Resorts. Check out Bears defensive end Khalil Mack showing off the impressive strength, knocking down his coach. Imagine blocking against him for an entire game.
Look at the season he had, missing all offseason workouts, all the training camp. I expect Khalil Mack to have an amazing season this year.
Right, and his numbers are unbelievable despite it during the year missing a few games with injury. He was... When you see two first-round picks for a non-quarterback, when you see that price paid, you see, man, he better come. What do you have, strip sack in four straight games to start the year? He was unbelievable. If Trubisky can take a little bit of a leap ahead, being the number 2 pick of the draft, they could be really, really good in a really tough division.
All right, time now for some stories to start your morning. NFL.com released its list of the top 100 players in the league, and the 2-time reigning defensive player of the year, Aaron Donald, was ranked number 1. See, did the players get this right?
Man, he's a bad man. He's a bad man. It's hard to make a defensive lineman, almost to impossible, to get that type of respect. To me, it's been the players. They know what they're talking about. They watch the games, and they watch that coach's tape, which there are no lies, to say the eye in the sky. That's what the players say. Eye in the sky does not lie.
Yeah.
Aaron Donald is the best football player that we have in the league.
I thought it was the pie.
Breadsticks. For Aaron Donald to be the top of this list, J.J. Watt a couple times at the top of this list, guys who historically only all-time greats get big numbers and recognition from 3-4 D-end or interior line. These two guys, I don't think it's a stretch to say at all, are already all-time greats. Aaron Donald right now, the best at his job of anyone in the NFL. The players recognize that.
All right, sticking with the list, Drew Brees was ranked 2nd overall. The next quarterback, Patrick Mahomes, at 4. Mahomes beat out Brees for the MVP last season. Nick, care to weigh in on this?
Yeah, I mean, listen, you're not going to parse this terribly. Obviously, Mahomes should have been the highest-ranking quarterback, but he's 2nd highest-ranking quarterback. Gave Brees the old man respect, which I suppose he deserved. We thought through 12 weeks last year.
If it was old man respect, why ain't they giving the MVP?
Well, that's what I was about to say, is we thought through 12 weeks last year.
It's amazing when I say something, you're like, that's what I was getting ready.
Yeah, well, you interrupt me a lot, and we've been doing the show a lot together, so you think where I'm going before I get there. Drew Brees, when he had 25 touchdowns, 2 picks to start the season, looked like he was going to be the MVP.
It's called adding to
it. Oh, clarification. That's correct. Different philosophy there. But yesterday, we both said we thought Mahomes would be the number 1 quarterback on this list. I'm a little surprised. A little added chip on his shoulder for the reigning league MVP.
I'm so glad the players made you upset. I'm so glad. But from week 0 to week 13, Drew Brees was that guy. Mm-hmm. He didn't finish the season as strong as Patty Mahomes. And the record-breaking number, Patty Mahomes, that's why he edged him out. But week 0 to 13, man, Drew Brees was amazing. Him and Michael Thomas were amazing. They had a little drought at the end of the season, but they got it right again. And they got Nick upset, so I'm happy about it. How can I lose in that?
Win-win overall. Yeah. Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.